Excited to welcome WNBA assistant coach and unrivaled head coach Zach O'Brien to the Basketball Podcast. O'Brien currently serves as an assistant coach for the Los Angeles Sparks, a role he stepped into for the 2025 season, and was most recently the head coach of the Miss BC in the Unrivaled Basketball League, where he led Miss BC to the 2026 Unrivaled Championship. O'Brien's rise through the WNBA ranks is highlighted by his recent tenure with the New York Liberty, where he served as an assistant coach. During his time in Brooklyn, O'Brien was a key architect in the player development and scouting efforts that culminated in the New York Liberty's 2024 WNBA championship. Before his championship run in New York, O'Brien spent three seasons with the Phoenix Mercury. Starting as a video coordinator, he quickly earned a promotion to director of player development, helping guide the Mercury to the WNBA finals appearance in 2021. His professional foundation also includes a stint in the NBA G League as video coordinator for the Northern Arizona Suns. Outside of the traditional bench roles, O'Brien is highly regarded for his work in elite skill acquisition. He spent several years coaching alongside Noah LaRoche at Integrity Hoops. Hey coach, brief interruption from your podcast to hear from one of our top supporters, Hoopsalytics. Is your starting lineup not performing to your expectations? What if your star player is injured? Who should you play together instead? You can answer questions like this using the powerful Hoopsalytic basketball platform to reveal your most productive players and lineups. Just ask the AI assistant, and based on extensive player and lineup stats and analytics, you'll get accurate, data-driven answers instantly. You can literally ask anything about teams and players and then start making even better strategic decisions. Hoopsalytics also provides top-tier video link stats with a 12-hour turnaround time, as well as handy visualizations, interactive shot charts, coaching stats, easy-to-create film sessions, and lots more. And unlike the alternatives, you get unlimited video storage with no hidden fees. Best of all, Hoopsalytics is more affordable. Now in year 7, Hoopsalytics is a true game changer for thousands of basketball coaches. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball and start using advanced stats and AI to win more games today. Zach, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Chris, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's going to be great to talk to you. And let's start with it. Champions of Unrivaled. Let's talk about that. How did that come about? And congrats.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It was a special season. It was really a great time for us. As always, it starts with the players. If you want to be successful, have really good players on your team. And not just that, but really good people who are about the right things and who want to show up day to day and be pros and work hard. And that's what we had. We had a drama-free team all season, a team that got along really well and just enjoyed each other's company. And to have a group like that be successful at the end is something that's really satisfying. Just happy for them to get their payday and to see them go out on top.
We're going to go, you'll talk about that. You'll talk about your WNBA sure. experiences. You'll talk about your training experiences. You'll talk about all these things, but just shape it a little bit for the audience. You have a skill acquisition background. You have a background in significant role in kind of not just the theoretical, but the applied version of skill acquisition, having worked with Noah and Integrity Hoops as well. So maybe just shape it for our audience, a little bit of your background so we understand where you're talking from.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a heavy player development background. Like you said, I learned under Noel Roach, who I consider a friend and a mentor. And he's someone who shaped, like you said, my theoretical background, but also set me on my path for learning and really gave me the platform in things like decision making and things like principle building and playing with principles. My experience learning under him was truly invaluable. After that, I've been fortunate enough to learn from some more great people and to be able to build on my experience with Noah and get into the WNBA and pro basketball and to be around people, Sandy Brown and a bunch of other amazing coaches. So yeah, I was able to turn a player development role into becoming a holistic coach and something I'm proud of today.
I love that. Frame it for us a little bit. CLA, game-based, decision training, decision-making, all these things. We'll just blend them all together. When you came in the WNBA, I'm imagining some of the role that you fulfilled was relatively new in terms of having someone focus in those areas and move away from the robotic memorized reps. So talk to us first about that experience of getting players, getting staff, getting administration to open their mind to this version of training.
Yeah, I think you said it. It's opening people's minds because it is different. I think where I really benefited was I came in, my first pro job was with Phoenix, with the Mercury, with Sandy Brondello. And I came in as technically a video coordinator, but Sandy allowed me to do everything. So she allowed me to come in and just immediately be who I was from day one and implement my practices with our players. And those players just happen to be people like Diana Taurasi and Skylar Diggins and Brittany Griner. And to have someone like Sandy who's pushing me to be myself, but then also having players who are open-minded to these kinds of things, because it is different. These are players who are very routine-based and are a lot of times as they get older, set in their ways. And so to, again, not just have a coach who's pushing you, but to have players buy in to what you want to do and be open-minded to something new, right? Regardless of what it is, something new and something that we'll get into it, but these decision-making principles don't feel very good in the moment when it comes to development. It's and what you learn is that's the best growth. So yeah, trying to get away from that block training. And one of my favorite quotes or some of the best feedback I've ever gotten was from Skylar Diggins, who once told me, "Zach makes me feel like I can't dance." And that's, I think that's such a great way to put it. Because that ugliness is something you got to deal with.
The struggle is part of the learning process, and the struggle is
Absolutely.
necessary to grow in that part that goes with it. I'm curious some of your best practices then for, because there's many coaches. This is becoming, the ball's rolling down the hill now. Like coaches
Absolutely.
that aren't getting on board, aren't figuring this stuff out, are going to get past much of the analytics, those that were slow to that. So talk to us
Yep.
about some of the best practices for selling this, so to speak, to players in particular.
Yeah, it's for me the main thing. Obviously, you want to incorporate decision-making constraints in everything you do. And the goal is to cut out as much of the classic teaching, the rep-based teaching, that placebo effect. You want to cut out that as much as possible. I think for me, there can be pushback from players because it is a different style. What I try to do and what I think the biggest benefit is being driven by decision-making allows you to cater your training to specific players. And for example, right now I'm working with Cam Brink, right? I just got to LA and she's the one player who's in town right now. And so I have the fortune to work with her. And what I'm telling her is, hey, for these first 2 weeks, I'm going to put you in different situations just to draw out what I need to know about your skill set. I can watch all the film and look at all the numbers, but I need to see what you do in these specific situations. What do you do going left when someone cuts you off on a drive, going right, because they're probably a little different? And not only to see the gaps in your skill set, but also what are some of your strengths? What are some of the moves and the things you do naturally that then we can go and build on? And so there's this, I think if you're doing it right, there's this amazing like fact-finding first couple weeks that you get with players that just really allows you to tailor their experience to them. And again, I think if you do it the right way, they're going to give you all the answers. So you just have to put them in the right situations to either draw out or highlight the gap in the skill set or try to push a skill forward.
Again, so been in this space for a very long time, since 2014 with basketball immersion. And I
Yeah.
understand everything that you're talking about. I phrase it like you're creating the environment and then you're letting them explore the environment. That's
Absolutely.
the hardest part, isn't it, Zach? As a coach, and
Yep.
certainly a coach coming to this, but it's also a little uncomfortable for the player who's been used to being told exactly what to do and how to do it.
Percent. It's exploratory is the big thing. Creativity is a word I use a ton. My players give me crap for it. Stay creative. And again, going back to just the difference in this teaching style is I try to tell my players, when in doubt, in a situation or in a drill, in a rep, just play, just hoop, just do what you would do naturally. And again, I'm going to get so much information from that. But again, giving them that canvas to work with and giving them the constraints, but making them feel like they're not boxed in. And I think you touched on it as coaches. One, we have to be very comfortable with the struggle, but also we have to be super just solid in the fact that we might not have control in a lot of this stuff. And that, again, if we're doing this the right way, the players are in control and they're driving the car. And this is something I would tell my team at Unrivaled a lot is you're driving the car and I'm just keeping you on the road. I'm just guiding your practice and I'm allowing you to veer left and right. But at the end of the day, it's my job to keep you on the road. And again, I have to cede some of my control. It's individual player based, but it's also what's really highlighted this for me is I've been in three finals in the last 5 years, right? And what you realize is at that level, and now as a coach, everything for me, all my decisions are framed through, does it work in the finals? And at that level, what you realize is there might be 2, 3, 4 minutes that go by where there's not even a stoppage, there's no play calls. You're just playing in flow, and the pace is dictating that the players are making every single decision again for 2, 3, 4 minutes, and you have no control. And that's where you take that and you have to prepare your individuals and your team for those moments, right? It's, hey, my kid just turned 18. They're out of the house and my job is done. Now, all that work that I've done for their childhood or for a team for training camp and practice is now is going to come to fruition. And that for me is coaching.
I love those two examples. One is connecting it to parenting. I think a lot of parents can relate to this, that your goal is to foster independence. And you can't foster
Yes.
independence without allowing them permission and freedom to be able to figure things out on their own. The second part, which I really love, and I've gone to shaping this with coaches, especially coaches that have coached for a long time, is like when you say just hoop, that reconnects to some coaches who just literally, again, would put kids in scrimmages and like pickup and different things like that they can relate to back then. But of course, it's not just hoop as in the roll out the balls type of way. So help shape it a little bit more for coaches in terms of when you do see something with a player that, hey, I can help shape this more specifically or help them find a little bit more success with this. What are we actually doing? Which for me is the 30, which I say for general people is like explicit instruction, but it's not exactly
Yeah.
that. It's using constraints generally to be able to shape it. So help us understand
Yes.
that a little bit more.
Yeah. So again, it's going back to the blocked versus the random of we have data now that tells us essentially what I tell you as a coach, that doesn't stick with players almost at all. What I tell you and what you do are almost never aligned. And so we have to create the habits, and not just the habits, but we have to create self-reflective players who it's on us to outline the constraints, right? And to outline where we want to go with this and to give them an idea of, hey, we're not just rolling the ball out, right? There's a purpose to this. So I think that's where the craft comes in, right? Of coaching and communication of, hey, we're working on this little micro skill, but we're putting it in this big 3-on-3 environment, right? And again, that's where you got to be able to deal with like guiding them through some ugly reps. Guiding them when they're going to push back and be like, Zach, why the hell are we doing this? What are we getting out of this? We're not working on anything. And then from the team side, especially, I think that's where your principles come into play. Of one thing that I just try to do really well as a coach is I try to let you be yourself in that team environment, right? And we can pull on the mist where I have players like Breanna Stewart and Arike Ogunbowale and players who are supremely confident in every single shot they're going to take. And it's be yourself. I want you to take all those shots and to get into your bag. But if it doesn't fit into our team construct, then we probably have to remove it, right? And so it's just that concept of be yourself, but as long as you're operating within our team principles, right? And within what we want to do. And then, of course, there's some gray area always, but it's just constantly framing. What do we want to get? What do we want to accomplish? And that could be in an individual or a team setting. And then again, just tailoring it to that specific team or to that player.
I love this. And I do want to connect it to style of play because I think that's a really important part of this is conceptually is obviously the cool way to say it nowadays, but it's like connecting this to style of play helps your players understand it more because you're
For
not going to
sure.
then coach this way and then go into the game and call out 100 plays and really control them, are you?
Yes, no, exactly. Exactly. And this is with the mist and unrivaled, this was a big part of the process, right? Of when we're flowing, even in some free throws, don't look at me for a play call, right? Look at, what we call it the KYs, right? And this is where we don't want to just work on decisions. We want to give players the platform to make the decisions, right? So don't just allow them to process freely, right? What are they processing? And then how are we making these decisions, right? And the question you should be asking your players the most for me is, why did you do that? What were you processing to make you do that? And I think I call it the KYs, right? Know yourself, know your personnel, know your teammates, know your role. And at that point, like with those four things in mind, you should be making if you're processing those correctly, your decision making should be really high level. So it's not just, hey, let's work on decisions and let's put them in positions to train their decision making, but also, hey, how did you come to this decision? And we know how quickly these things should be happening in the game, but yeah, how quickly did you come to this decision? And then that's where the principles again will frame us. This is not new by any means, but for us, it's pace, space, shot profile, right? And so that offensively and defensively can just clarify so many things, right? Hey, should I take this mid-range or should I kick it out for three? It's our shot profile dictates you have the answer. And it's knowing what are the bottlenecks going to be? What are some of the wrinkles we're going to have to iron out? And then putting your principles in line to get ahead of a lot of that stuff, right? And then again, allowing people to fully be themselves within those principles. And then once they get off the road, it's okay, we got to bring you back a little bit.
So talk to us a little bit deeper about those principles and how that actually influences your coaching. Because again, most coaches, I think to a certain extent, think they have principles of play. This is how we play. But what I think the superpower of this approach is that those principles of play are what you're coaching. You're not coaching
Yes.
the plays, you're coaching the principles of play. And that's a big
Yes.
difference.
100%. It's again, it guides you on both sides. It creates the simplicity and it allows you to be process-based, right? So again, offensively, pace-based shot profile, these are the three things we talk about every day, right? And it's if our offense goes stagnant, sometimes it's let's get this play call, let's put this person in an action, let's bring the defender, the pigeon into the action. But a lot of times it's, hey, our spacing is not right. We're not playing with the pace that is making the other team uncomfortable, where we're beating them down the floor and we don't even want an action, right? We want a drive or a cut to create an advantage and to go, or we want our pace to create enough of an advantage where we can just get a drive and get an early paint touch. And yeah, like we're not talking specific actions. We're talking when our offense goes stagnant, we need to play faster, we need to space the court more, and we need to find better shots. And what you get to is those are the three things that guide not just your practice and not just your game decisions, but also like you can then be as simple as if we're not playing well, it's probably just because we're the more passive team. And that's what we would get to a lot in Unrivaled is, okay, we're maybe executing our principles, but we're too passive. And so the core of basketball is always we're just going to play harder than you, right? And we're going to be the aggressor and we're going to dictate the terms. And with that as your foundation, your principles are built on top of that. And that's, you can't build a house on a shaky foundation. And for championship teams, you're trying to build freaking skyscrapers, right? And so these principles and are your foundation. And I think we often think about them offensively, but I think it gives you so much clarity defensively too, right? Of, okay, we want to create pace. So on the other end, we need to take your pace away. So now we're going to tag up and we're going to pressure you full court and we're going to win those first 3 seconds of the shot clock, right? We're going to take away your space on the ball. We're going to pressure you and then we're going to be in gaps and we're going to be low man nail behind the ball, right? And then shot profile, right? That's where I think the most clarity comes in of what do I do in this situation? And it can be as simple as what do we want to get offensively? Let's give up the opposite defensively. And again, like simplicity is something I'll use a lot, but it just becomes do what makes sense. What makes sense in this specific situation, and just execute that, and then have our principles in mind and know what we want to give up and know what we want to create. And that just these the players that we're coaching are natural, intuitive athletes. And we want them to be thinkers, but we want them to be subconscious thinkers and quick, intuitive, decisive. We don't want them thinking A to B to C. And so it's, we can talk about all this, right? But at the core of it, it's get your players to make quick decisions and trust those decisions. And then trust the fact that everything we do, we work on a counter for it. Any move, you have a counter. So if you make the wrong decision, you always have a counter for it. Okay. And so trust that. And that's a big thing just at the core of this whole practice.
Great perspective. Thank you for sharing that. That's awesome. And some coaches can't get beyond this part. They think, okay, this is just for elite players. But certainly with Integrity Hoops, you've been exposed to this at different levels of basketball. And
Yes.
really, not that much change in terms of principles of play being the guidance for your coaching. But can you talk a little bit more specifically about new players, about younger players, about less experienced players, and how this method works for them too?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite little like Noah wrinkles is he would say, the same way I train with professionals, I go and work with my friend's daughter's fourth grade team, and we're doing the same stuff. But it's still, they might not know exactly what we're doing, but we're still, hey, we're going to start you defender on hip on an advantage drive. And you might not know this, but now you're the low man. And if your teammate gets beat, now you got to stun and get back, or you have to peel switch. And again, they don't know these terms, but you're just framing it as, hey, if your teammate gets beat and the other team has a layup, what do you need to do? Okay, I need to help and take away the ball. And so it's just, again, it's simple basketball of just doing what makes sense. And we're not reinventing this game. There is a simplicity to it that sometimes as coaches, we think we have to do more and you don't, right? It's give your players the space and the platform to be successful. And like, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, right? And so it's a great question because that's, again, something I've always loved with Noah is he's, I'll go work with kindergartners the same way I work with Russell Westbrook and nothing changes. The language might be different, but at the end of the day, we're making reads and we're trying to help the players be reflective and be able to guide their own practices in a lot of ways.
I'm so glad you said it that way, because I think
Yeah.
coaches like just have a disconnect about that. But decision making is age appropriate at every level, and so is problem solving. And essentially, coaches, if you're unsure about this, just start with giving them a problem to solve and then give them space to solve the problem, right? And that's what you're essentially doing with Cam Brink right now. You're saying, hey, here's a game problem potentially. How are you going to solve it before I tell you or help you shape something else?
Yeah, that's it. They go hand in hand. Problem solvers is that's the big thing. That's what we want our players to be. Problems, decisions, like they make thousands of them per game. Even just, do I take this one step to the left or one step to the right? And this is the skill. And again, I can have all the best scheme in the world and the best X's and O's, but if I can't get player A to do thing B, it doesn't matter. And again, that's why I'm so big on like, you got to let players come in and be themselves and feel like we're seeing them as coaches for exactly who they are. And then, like you said, the best growth a lot of times in the moment doesn't feel good. It feels like navigating a dark room. But if you're really intentional as coaches, you start to take pride in, okay, this is going to look really ugly at first, but let's watch how they work themselves out of it. And that's the best part is like you're fumbling around the room and you're bumping into things, and then slowly you start to map it. And okay, the couch is over there and the desk is over there. It's that process over and over. No, small scale, big scale, it's that process over and over. And I think it's Ray Dalio in Principles, he charts growth as just this like this loop that keeps going up, right? And it's I grow. And then as coaches, we got to find a way to bring them back down, right? And to work through that mud just to propel them to that next level. And so, yeah, it's just that over and over.
Yeah, you make the comfortable uncomfortable and then help them be comfortable again and then keep repeating
Exactly.
the process right over and over.
And I think, Chris, the more you do it, like there initially there is player pushback. But I think the more you do it, the more the players start to take pride in the problem solving. And they start to take pride in, okay, I'm fumbling through this and it's ugly and it's, but then they start to connect the dots and they start to see it. And when you get the right group, and I think when you're teaching it correctly, that's the stuff that really becomes fun within your practices and within your seasons.
Love that. That's a great example. Hey, coach, I'm excited to let you know that we just released a full 86-minute masterclass on how we developed youth players and teams in simple and easy to apply ways. These are the same methods that I used with local teams here in Los Angeles that have gone from getting beat by 30 to beating teams by 30. At Basketball Immersion, we coach kids for the long term, so they're still engaged, confident, and improving later in their basketball career, not just winning games at 8, 9, and 10. When you join, you get access to a youth coaching masterclass that's transforming programs around the world, plus our full library of incredible ready-to-use resources and courses. This masterclass alone is worth the investment, and your players will thank you. Go to basketballimmersion.com/sales today to get started. We're very fortunate, obviously, with your head coaching experience. We can go into a little bit of the deep dive of offensive and defensive install, which I'd love to hear your perspectives on from this approach. How do you go about installing offense and defense?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. It's one, establishing, okay, we want to play pace, space, shot profile offensively. I think first it's establishing, because every coach is different, every roster is different, how much of the game do we actually want to play in transition and in flow, right? And so how much of the game is going to be unscripted, essentially? And okay, you can get into little trigger actions. You have your drag screens and flow, and you can go away in pin downs or different cutting actions. But for me, it starts with how much do we want to play in transition and in flow. In New York, that was like 60%+ of the time. I'd say with the Mist and in Unrivaled, it was probably more 70, 80%. I felt like an AAU coach out there sometimes being like, go, just telling him every make or miss, push, push. And so that was really a big thing with me. I want that initial number of flow and transition to be as high as possible. And then outside of that, and this is where, again, I really try to dumb it down. I don't have a lot of sets. Outside of that, it's let's find the bad defender and let's find our two or three best players and let's put them in action and let's put the bad defender in action as much as possible. And so every coach has their actions and their sets that they like. But for me, it's as simple as that of, okay, how are we going to run? What's our transition philosophies? We could get into that more. Sonia Rahman, who was with New York this year, who's going to be the head coach in Seattle with the Storm going forward, who's excellent. One of her specialties is like running habits in transition. And that was something that she opened my eyes so much to, like organizing the chaos that is transition. And then not just that, but then how are we going to operate out of not positionless basketball, but positionless spacing? And that's where, okay, mapping the court comes in and all these different things of who's quarterbacking the actions. But you got to get your transition game down. What do you want your bigs doing? Who's taking the ball out? What are your running habits? What are you looking to accomplish? What are your flow actions? And that's for me where your KYs come in. If I can quickly, as I'm handling in flow, process, okay, who am I? Who are my teammates right next to me? Who am I playing with? Where are we spaced? And quickly find a quick action. And then once you're in the half court, it's whatever you want to run. It's either put your two or three best players in action or just find the pigeon and put them in action. And I think that's what we were really driven by with the Mist, is we're going to either push and we're going to pace and space and attack our way into an advantage, or we're going to just try to put you in some compromising positions.
So, going, I guess, a little bit deeper, where is the
Sure.
structure? Because it's not the absence of structure, it's a structure to
Yeah.
unstructure, right? So, is there a
Yes.
structure in terms of the spacing spots? You said mapping the court in terms of spacing.
Yes.
Where else are there some structures that help? Because I think coaches, again, need to wrap their mind around the fact that it's not an absence of structure, it's an absence of me controlling the structure.
Yes. Yeah. So it starts with your running habits, is like those first two or three steps, right? You hear coach say that all the time. When the first two or three steps, we need to be organized within our transition running, right? So we're playing with pace, but we're not just running down the court with our hair on fire, right? It's the two highest people coming off of our defensive possessions, you fill the corners. And I'll just get into what I would do, or what I do is I don't care if you're a guard or a big, right? One to five, you fill those corners if you're the closest people. And then your next two are the wings. And then whoever the handler is, I think in an ideal world, whoever rebounds, you're the decision maker coming up. Now we're seeking throw aheads, right? Because we have our five out spacing and we want throw aheads to advantages. But where it starts is your transition running habits and getting to your early spacing. Now that is different for everyone. It could be bigs rim run to the dunker, rim run and respace, whatever that looks like. But you have to have your transition principles down. And for me, it was we're going to run it in a positionless fashion just to get to the quickest possible maximal spacing, if that makes sense. And from there, this five out spacing, like this is all the breakdown work that we do in practice. So all of our two person mini games, our two on two small sided games, our three on three small sided games, those are all based within our five out spacing, right? We might put a three on three with top, wing, and corner, and it's just a random entry to one of the three offensive people. And at that point, we're not just playing random. We have, hey, if the ball goes corner, you have two or three options. If the ball goes to the wing, you have two or three options. And then the decision-making factor comes into, okay, we're working on our offense, but we're giving them just a handful of options. And what we're expecting is out of this random environment, quickly process those options. Again, who am I playing with? Who am I playing against? What is my role? And then go execute that. And not just execute it, but communicate it. So now, whoever I'm passing it to could be a center who's never going to call out an action or a play, but now you're the one quarterbacking it. You're the one telling the other two. And so you're building the pieces into the whole, right, with your small-sided games. And so, just like anything you do, once you get 5-on-5 out there, it just becomes now it's just your three-person action that we just worked on, but now it's just two people spacing on the other side. And then once you three play and the ball swings to the other side, it's the same idea. Let's process who am I playing with? Is the big coming out of the corner? Is the big going dribble out to the corner? Right. So it's the process of building your system with your small-sided games and with your principles to then put the puzzle pieces into the grand scheme was the biggest thing. And that's, again, as they're flowing with what we're talking about, you're not giving them any calls. You're trusting them to map the court, to be a conduit to what you want, and then be individualistic in their ability to make these decisions.
So one of the challenges that I'd love to hear your thoughts are is sometimes when you do conceptual things and you do triggers, for example, players, especially youth players, will fall in love with doing the same thing over and over again because again, they get used to comfort of one thing. So how do you help them diversify their actions or again, within those actions, develop those counters?
Yeah, that's where your constraints come in. That's where your games and your constraints and your scoring systems really come into play. And with the Mist, it was constantly trying to find balance between we're playing with ball screens versus we're not. And so it was a big thing where if we can gain an advantage with a drive or a cut, or essentially without ever bringing two people together, we want to do that. That's our goal, right? And but to your point, the second I would give them ball screens, that's all they would use. They would just find the ball screen. That's their comfort zone. So we would just play, hey, you can't have a two-person action. You can't bring two people together ever. And you can really do that with anything. Like with our shot profile, we can harp on your mid-range jumpers all day, or we can just play games in practice where the only shots that count are threes and RA. And you can go ahead and take that mid-range, but your teammates are going to be looking at you crazy. And then also what that does on the defensive side of the ball of now think about what I'm processing defensively is I can't give up three or rim. You're going to be bailing out to run them off the 3-point line and to get them out of the rim, and it gets them thinking differently. Even going back to like my time with Noah, like you would work with so many great pros who like couldn't jump off their right leg and finish with their left hand. And it's like they would have a great left hand, but they couldn't jump off their right leg, or that couldn't be their finishing leg. And so you would just give them the constraint of everything you do, you have to jump off your right foot. And so, like, we can sit there and tell them this shit all day, excuse me, but if you're not developing the habits and putting them in situations where they have to navigate through these different things and get away from their comfort zone, then you're probably not going to get anywhere. So, just little constraints and scoring systems for me are driving almost everything we do in practice.
I love that. Can you go a little further, give us some other ideas? Because again, there's a big movement now that, oh, I've always used constraint-led approach, and now you're just telling me what I did based on science. And to a certain extent, that's true, right? Because coaches have always used scoring systems. But this scoring system's a little bit more specific because we can shape technique with the scoring system. And that's where I think some people, oh, we're just shaping team play, but we're shaping technique. So can you give us a little bit more examples of those type of constraints or scoring systems that can help us shape a technique?
Yeah, for sure. Something is, let's go to our principles like pace, right? If we want to play fast, there's two ways we can do it. We can sit there and go 5-on-0 or 3-on-0 and put them in a shot clock and run them up and down all day and give them script actions and yell at them to get it out of the net quicker. Or we can just play a full court game and it's a 12-second shot clock. It's like you can drive through cones or you can just go drive through New York City, right? And which way is going to be better to learn? And a lot of it is just that. I'm trying to think of some other stuff. We would play with no dribble a lot, right? That was a big thing. If we want to work on our cutting and our off-ball movement specifically, we're going to play with no dribble. Or even
But you
You
can
know, some.
individualize that too, right? That doesn't have to be the whole team. That can be, hey, just Zach today is no dribble.
Yes, no, 100%. And I think individually it goes back to, hey, you got to jump off your right foot, or,
That example was tremendous, by the way. That's exactly what we're talking about.
absolutely. And just giving them, hey, you can only shoot from these two spots, or you can only pass with your left hand, is you can get so specific with this stuff. And I go back to what I was saying at the start of it's going to be so different for every player. And you're probably going to just come up with random stuff for every player. Like, I was working with Rebecca Gardner in New York last year, and she's coming back from an Achilles injury. And one of her things was like just reading closeouts and not turning down catch and shoots on closeouts. And this is a decision thing. You could be the best shooter in the world, but if you don't know the ones to take, it doesn't matter. And so what we would do is like a little constraint or a little game with her is we would put her in a spot. And we would tell our practice guys on the kick or on the swing to her in the corner, do everything in your power but block her when she shoots her shot. So you can disrupt her any way possible. You just can't block her shot. And just trying to create in her head, you're turning down these shots and you think these players are close, but now look at what happens when they fly at you and when they do all these things to disrupt you. Look at how easily you can get your shot off. So just trying to create those pathways of this block that I'm putting on myself, or this bottleneck that I'm putting on my skill set, is actually not there. And it's just showing them that what you're not doing is right there for the taking if you want, which is just going to take a few reps to get over that hump, right? Cam Brink is no different. She's a great left-hand driver, but I don't think she's another one who's super comfortable getting to that right foot and jumping off that right foot. And so it's just making her see, hey, when you drive left, you're not allowed to counter. You need to bully your way to the rim. Don't just give up on that left-hand drive and counter back to your right and your comfort zone, because it's right there. And it's, as a coach, I think we just, again, being very player specific, and like what they do in these situations that you put them in is going to tell you everything.
I love that example, by the way. Coaches, note that one, like of not, you can't block the shot, but you can disrupt it. You can get there and wall up. You can do all those different things and develop this kind of help side awareness and understanding, but also to disrupt the ball pickup, disrupt the release. I think about it because my daughter trains with a 6'5 girl, a 6'1 girl, and then she's about 5'8. So it's like removing that kind of shot block mentality helps them all develop a little bit because they're all trying to disrupt before the point of release. And it's just beautiful to be able to watch them all figure it out based on that. Because clearly, if I'm still going to shoot it into the 6'5 girl, she's going to just block it naturally by just having her wall up. So, like seeing them trying to figure it out in real time is awesome. So, thank you for
No doubt.
that awesome example.
No, and then trying to build on it too. Ideally, these aren't just one-off drills. We're building off of them too. To your point, we might then go to a drill where, okay, it's not just catch and shoot. If you want to slide out one way or the other, you add your dribble pull up to it. But there's also an aspect of we have to cross the line to know where the line is. And so sometimes it's, guys, do everything you can to block her shot. And because the players need to feel like, okay, that didn't work. Or like, when the defender is that close, that's when it's not going to work. And so here's the line. And so I know, okay, now I can't go to the other side of that line. And I'll go back to Cam Brink. Like, for her, it's actually the opposite right now, is we're trying to get her, or I'm trying to get her to shoot some of these catch and shoot threes with the defender a little closer to her. I'm trying to have her reevaluate and regauge, like, hey, you're 6'5 and you shoot from above your head. I don't care if the defender is right there. Shoot it in their face. And then if they get too close or they heavy contest, then you can walk it back and say, okay, that's the point where I know I maybe got to pump and rip and go by. But again, let's cross the line in our training. Let's be open to breaking rules and crossing lines, just to see where the lines are and to see what I can get away with. And again, being specific to Cam, you're 6'5 and you're a great shooter. So the more I can pull out that closeout 6 inches, 12 inches further, the more I can extend my range to the NBA and again pull that closeout even further. It's like Channing Frye would say, I think he said, if I can get it to my shoulders on my jumper, there's nothing you can do at that point. And taking that into what we do. But again, just being player specific and being really creative with this stuff.
And it strikes me, you can't tell her that. She has to experience that. And that's really the whole
Exactly.
goal of all this approach. And look, the thing I want coaches to note that you've said, which I think is, again, incredibly powerful, is that we're not doing the same thing all the time. And in fact, you could do literally the same small-sided game every single practice, and it would never be boring for a player. Because whether it's individually or collectively, you're changing the constraints, whether you can block the shot or you don't block the shot. And you want to intentionally mix it up, don't you?
Yes. No, absolutely. You have to keep it fresh. And to your point, no two reps should be the same. It's like a game. You can stand in the corner and make 10, or you can get five quality closeout reads from the corner. And that, what seemingly might not feel good in the moment, again, is just so much more beneficial. And I'm just going back to working with younger players, and I'm thinking back to my time in Maine, where I'm running a program and I'm working with a kindergartner who's just learning to shoot and just learning to play. And like, even with him, I'm giving him a pass, and it's, he might have no idea what I'm even doing, but it's, hey, if I don't come guard you, shoot it. If I come guard you, drive by and shoot it closer. When it's even at that level, we're not doing block training. Like, we're immediately right into reads. And yeah, to your point, these are players who love to compete and want to be in games and want to be engaged in this stuff. And as a coach, I don't want to train rep. It's so boring for me, right? I want to get you in a game. I don't want to intro a lot. I want quick, hey, here's our game, here's our constraints, go. And then we'll craft it as we go. But I'm not going to sit there and give you this 5-minute TED talk on what our drill is going to be so you do it perfectly. No, I want to give you minimal. I want to see how you respond to it, and then I'll craft it from there. But it's like a lot of this, it's throw them into the fire, and it could be a small fire, right? It could be minimal, or it could be a big one, but throw them into the fire and then see how they navigate from there.
It's very freeing as a coach. And obviously, so
100%.
many members of our community have gone to this approach, and they all comment in some way about how much more enjoyable it is to coach this way. Because instead of spending hours trying to figure out the drill, you're literally figuring out the game situation. And then you're spending all this time trying to manipulate constraints, create affordances, create these different opportunities for players to be able to evolve and learn. And it's just so fun to be able to do that. I was with Joe Boland this past weekend. I know you know him well. And we were at EYBL Scholastic, and we were presenting to coaches on all these concepts. And the thing that kept coming back to that Joe and I had to keep talking about, and we had a good conversation about this, which I know you deal with too, is the hard thing for coaches to get around and players to get around is this less is more part of this, right? They're used to shooting 100 shots. And then they, in this version of it, where they either shoot it or drive it that you just said, maybe they only shoot it 30 times. But that causes a real problem in some coaches and some players' thinking, doesn't it?
Sure. It's the one thing with this is you can't half-ass it. This is an all-in approach, and it's very much quality over quantity. And I've mentioned it a couple times, but there is and there can be player pushback because the players want that feel, they want that feel-good stuff, they want to rep, and it's just all they know. And so a lot of it is retraining the players and their thinking. But you
How
do, like
much do you
I
educate them about the science part of it?
Not much,
Yeah.
not much. And it's very player dependent. So I get with someone like Courtney Vandersloot, right? And she comes to New York, and she's at a point in her career where, she's getting a little older, but I had sent her very early on. It might have been from Talent Code or Peak. It was some passage from a book that essentially says, you can teach an old dog new tricks. And the only thing that stops our development is our mind, right? And like, our mind putting a ceiling on what we can do. And she just loved it. And so I have in my notes just all my favorite passages from everything I've read. And I pull from those constantly. And so I would just send her stuff all the time of, hey, this seemingly ugly practice that we had today, here's why we do it. And so she was really receptive to that. But then you get someone like Stewie, who's just like free flowing and just, I'm gonna show up and tell me what to do. And if I don't like it, I'm gonna ask you why. And she doesn't want any of that information, right? She just wants to feel like she's coming in and getting really good work. And it depends on the player, but I do think you have to be ready for not just the player pushback, but these are pros. They're opinionated and they want to know why, right? They want to know why we're doing this stuff. And so you just have to have the answers ready, and you have to again, like you have to be so solid and within yourself as a coach. Of I go back to Steph Dolson in New York. I worked with her for an entire off season, and for the first 2 weeks, she would look at me and be like, "Zach, when are we going to work on stuff? When are we going to work on stuff?" And I'd say, "Steph, this is, you have to explain that. Hey, this is what we do, and I get it's a little different." And it didn't click for her until she went away and worked with someone else and then came back and was like, "Okay, I get it. And I don't ever want to train any other way again." And again, I just think you have to rewire how players have worked in the past. And then being process driven, I feel like in individuals and in the team environment, I spend a lot of my energy praising good process, bad result, right? And so that is just having them see you be so like unequivocally process driven, sometimes to a fault. But no, we're going to create that shot and I don't care about the result, right? The last thing I'm worried about is your makes and misses. No, how do we get the shot? How do we do it? Did you get to your spot? Did you free your hands? Like all that stuff. Like Cam had a rep the other day where she like great rep, multiple different reads, misses a shot, is pissed. And it's that was maybe the best rep we've had in 3 days. And so just again, like once you get them comfortable with this stuff, they start to love the ugly and they start to love that process of, okay, coach is putting me in the mud and he's really challenging me. Let me get out of this. But not just me individually, but let's work together to get out of this. And it becomes like you and your drill against the team. And it's like you have to be really, really thoughtful in how you approach your drill and your scoring system and always keeping them right on the fringes of their ability. And keeping them guessing.
Love that. Love them guessing and love them in terms of trying to figure things out. And I just want to emphasize, like coaches, they don't need to know all the science, and you don't need to know all the science. You just need to
Yep,
know that they're going to get
100%.
better playing basketball by playing basketball. And some version of basketball is going to help them get better. And by the time this is out, Zach, I'll have a blog because I get this asked all the time about, hey, how do you sell this? And I'll just have 100 phrases. And I'll say things like, hey, we're playing basketball. Like, we're playing basketball. Hey, figure it out. Figure it out. It's okay. Figure it out. And like these different phrases that just encourage them and remind them that you're playing basketball. This can't be that bad. And you said about the number of players. Like, I've been around so many pros lately that have turned to this method. And they're just like, what was I doing all these years? Practice was
100%.
boring. Like, training was boring. And it doesn't have to be, right?
No, for sure. And it's, yeah, I think as coaches, we love those little one-liners, the alliterations, the, hey, it's practice, not performance, right? It's play the cards you're dealt. It's be creative. It's make it work. It's problem solve. It's all these little things. It's not a perfect game. Great process, good reflection. What's your self-talk? Like, again, and it's, I think what we talked a lot about being secure as a coach within this style and being able to look at your players even when they're doubting and know that this is the right approach. And it's so much of it is with that. If I'm really like true to my principles, it's just going to simplify so much for me, right? And it just keeps the main thing. And you tell your team there's so much external nonsense throughout the course of a season or even individually. There's just so much external that you can focus on if you allow it to. But like within my team, I'm focused on pace, space, shot profile. Defensively, I'm focused on my principles. And it clarifies so much. And it allows you to just create and maintain an identity as a coach. I would have, and it is fun. To your point, it is, it's an absolute blast because who doesn't want to come in and just compete? You're like tricking them into learning. It's, and
And as a coach, you're getting game reps that you normally wouldn't get, right? And that's probably why you're able to accelerate your head coaching because you've coached the game in practice.
100%. It's the same conversations. And it's, again, it doesn't become me telling you what to do. It becomes this fluid day by day, week, season conversation of, hey, what were you thinking there? Where are we at? That's when I'm showing film. My main thing is like, what were you thinking here? Would you change anything about this play? What was successful here? It's fun to see the players take ownership of this stuff. It's one of the main questions I got from some of my coaching friends and colleagues was like, what were your reflections on Unrivaled? And I think the one thing I was really proud of was we as a staff came in and we wanted to do things a specific way. We wanted to, hey, here are our principles. And regardless of what happens, let's stay true to these and let's stay true to who we are and how we want to play. And we were really able to do that. And that's like maybe the thing I'm most proud of, because I think that's the toughest thing as a coach, is here's who I'm going to be. And whether it's going or whether it's going poorly, I'm going to stay within this, right? And I'm going to tinker with it. I'm not going to change who I am. I'm going to tinker with my principles and frame everything through that. So the benefits are everywhere. And specifically as a coach, with the growth, and then with just like finding your identity and staying true to who you are. And this, I think, thinking this way and training this way and approaching your team and individuals this way just allows you simplicity and clarification.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because I actually go to this argument that if you're a new coach or a parent suddenly coaching your kid's team, this is an easier method to be able to do it. Because again, at the end of the day, you really can't mess them up that much if they're playing some version of basketball in practice.
Yes.
I'd love to
No,
hear
for
your
sure.
thoughts further on that. Yeah.
For sure. And a big part of this, and I go back to the youth, and a big part of this, again, with your principals, is I was a phys ed teacher once upon a time for a year. And what you learn as a teacher is I can only quiz you and test you and hold you accountable to what I've taught. And I think that's, I say, keep the main thing. As you're building a team, and this is specifically at the younger levels, like, you can only hold them accountable to what you've taught, right? So if you're day one and all you've talked about is, hey, we want to shoot from the three in the RA and that's our shot profile, that's really all you can hold them accountable to. And I think you can give them the sprinkles of, hey, you just did this one action and we're going to explore that later on. So keep doing that, right? You can emphasize, but at the end of the day, you just have to know, what have I taught to this point? What have we emphasized that's important? And then I can only really hold the team accountable to that, if that makes sense. And that's at all levels. And that, again, just finding ways to like to just clarify things as a coach of so much stuff is going to be important, right? But when everything is important, nothing's important. And this the principle, the approach and the decision-making approach just, again, just allows clarity.
Love that answer, Zach. And just this whole perspective is just awesome to hear. And again, it applies to all levels. But I know another thing that some coaches get stuck on is this idea of defense. Like they tend to only think of this as an offensive construct, but it's more than that. And we can shape defense just the same.
Yeah, I could argue even more so defensively. I think these principles come into play, and it is because of it clears up a lot of things for the players, right? And it clears up a lot of confusion. And so what we would do in New York, Olaf Lang runs our defense in New York, or did run our defense in New York, and I've learned so much from him. Like, he's prepared me so much to be able to have these conversations and coach defense at a high level. And we would have is on-ball disruption, off-ball shrink, and then rebound, right? And rebound is pretty self-explanatory, right? It's Joe Mazzulla, give me five people that can rebound. It's that simple. But just again, the simplicity of like on-ball disruption, off-ball shrink. And those are our two things. And you can put almost everything you want to do, for me at least, into those two categories, right? The second the defensive possession starts, our on-ball disruption starts. And we want to tag up, right? And for me, I reframe our offensive rebounding. It's not offensive rebounding. We're going to tag up. We're going to get early matchups and early pickups, and then we're going to get offensive rebounds by design out of that. But you want the early pickups. I think you want at least two of your guards and your primaries picking up their primaries as early as possible, right? So your on-ball disruption starts immediately. And just like offense, you want to win the first 2 or 3 seconds of the shot clock, but you also want to win the entire space of the court, right? And if we're going to play full court and pace on offense, we need to have the same mindset defensively, right? We want to fly up the court, which means we want to make every step you take up the court as difficult as possible. And so the on-ball disruption starts there. And then we want it similarly in the half court. But I think in the half court, what I've used is use your advantage, right? And so I could be a guard on a big. My advantage is my speed. So I got to get into you, and I got to get into your legs, and I got to push you east and west. But on the other side, if I'm a big and I'm guarding a guard, okay, now my length is my advantage. So find your advantage, use your advantage, and be disruptive in that way. And then off the ball, we're going to shrink, and we're going to do everything we can to take away the rim. That's like A1 for me, is take away the rim. And then obviously the shot profile comes into play. Andrew Wade, who I know you've had on, who I worked with in New York, who's the laces coach at Unrivaled, his thing was we're going to keep everything in front. And that's the way he framed it. Like on and off the ball, everything stays in front. And I love that. I stole that immediately when he told me. And like with those two things in mind, those are our two main principles. Almost everything we do defensively can be filtered through those two principles, right? Like in any moment, hey, what do I do on the ball? How can you disrupt it? And find that answer. Off the ball, what's our principle? Keep everything in front. Okay, then if my teammate is beat on a drive, I have to get in front of the ball. And I can figure out, is it a stunt? Is it a peel switch? Whatever. But if we're going to keep everything in front, that's guiding my decision making, right? And then we can, everyone wants to know, okay, which way are you going to push? Baseline or middle? What are you going to do on ball screens? And it's like, all that is cool, but that for me is like offensively, if you were going to say, what plays are you going to run? And forget the plays. Like execute your principles, hammer home your principles, and then the other stuff we can figure out. But I think what those principles get you to as well, and this is where I think Minnesota and Cheryl like do such a great job defensively of, I feel like they've figured out like the 3 to 5 patterns that happen the most on the court defensively. And they're so good at those 3 to 5 things. And you're just not, it's baseline drive, fire the low man, X out on the backside, right? Nail drive, stunt the stunner or peel switch to X out. They just had those patterns down so well. And so I think defensively, before you even get into scheme and what are we going to do in all these different situations, this is the power of your principles. Get them down. And again, almost like any question the players will have, they already have the answer to if you just push them towards the principles or if they're able to think through these things on their own.
Wow, coaches that made it to the end of the podcast, there's some gold. That's awesome. And it just struck me as you were saying that you've already framed this for us, simple is sophisticated. And that to me is simple. Keep the ball in front and obviously shrink the floor. Two very simple things. And you already framed this as well. I say it with this phrasing, basketball is a game of opposites. So it's beautiful. If you're shaping offense, you're shaping defense too, because it's opposites that you're trying to achieve. One last little piece for coaches is one easy way to develop defensive kind of understanding of constraints is just to think about flipping the constraint. If I give the offense the advantage in a small-sided game, then the next day give the defense's advantage in the small-sided game. And both ways they'll learn how to figure out playing with and without the advantage and a simple way to do it. I have another question I want to take advantage of. Okay, some of the stuff that I've done CLA with pros and CLA with pro coaches. Is the biggest challenge is sometimes the advantages are too big. Sometimes the constraint is not shaping what I want because it becomes too easy. And manipulating that becomes the biggest challenge. Whereas at the youth level, obviously we can give a bigger advantage because it's less of an advantage. Can you talk a little bit about that art of figuring that out?
Yeah, this is in your practice planning. This is the skill, I think, as a coach. This is where the craft comes in of knowing your players and knowing your team, and then knowing where have you been and where do you want to go. And a little side note. With these constraints and scoring systems, it's important to encourage coaches. Like we've talked about simplicity a lot. You have to have a good foundation for these games and these scoring systems. Like I think with the Mist, we had two scoring systems that we would play with, and we would just vacillate between those two. And we could do a bunch of other things, but those were our priorities. And so what you don't want within your games and stuff is players questioning, okay, what's our scoring system? What's the game? And so you have to, that has to be really clear.
I'm laughing
And
because I
then
know sometimes these scoring systems
100%.
become way too complicated. I can't even
100%.
follow them.
And yeah, again, like even as a coach, I'm not good at sitting there and counting. You have to, be consistent with that. And you don't want players asking, and they have enough to think about. We need to make them instinctual beings. And being just really deliberate with that, being consistent with your scoring and starting off as simple as possible with your scoring and as consistent as possible, just to get that foundation in.
Zach, man, this is awesome. So much information, but again, simple understanding of what it is. So coaches, if you don't understand what this is. And again, none of what you've said says that you need to understand in depth the science. Certainly it helps if you understand some of the evidence-based ideas like block versus random, all that other stuff that I think coaches generally know. And now it's just a bit of a leap for some of you to try it. And I'm not sure your recommendation to coaches. One of my recommendations to coaches is literally just try a drill in practice that normally you would teach it all at the beginning, and teach the bare minimum, as you said already, to just, okay, let them go experience it for a few minutes before you do anything. And that would be a starting point. And it's going to feel uncomfortable.
For sure. For sure. It's a great starting point. And what I like to tell people is whether it's your team or whether it's your individual workouts, start with just two decisions in this drill. Hey, you can go this way or you can go this way, right? If we're working on a crossover, pound, cross. If I shift, counter it back and go the same way you came from, right? If I don't, stay with the crossover and go. And so start with two decisions. You can go this way or that way, and then everything else can stay the same. And so you don't. I like your point of you don't have to know all the science. It's just challenge yourself to everything you do, have a decision. What Noah would say is if there's no decision, the rep doesn't count. And so hold yourself to that. And sure, we can teach, but yeah, you don't have to fit into anyone else's box. You can be so creative with that and try stuff. And then when you do try stuff, try to get ahead of what the bottlenecks might be, what the questions might be, what the points of contention with the players might be, and be ready to be adaptable and adjustable.
Love it. Said, we can't thank you enough for sharing the game with us. We're all excited to watch you continue to grow as a coach and see where the path takes you as well. But we're excited for it. And we know LA is going to have a great experience having you around this year. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the time.